Hello and welcome. Global warming. It sounds feasible, but is the science behind it defensible? Or is there no science behind it? It's time to find out. Joining me on the line is Grant R. Jeffrey, the internationally acclaimed author of 30 books, including Shadow Government, Countdown to Apocalypse, and The Next World War. His books have sold over 8 million copies. He's recognized as one of the world's leading experts on prophecy and apologetics, and appears frequently on television and radio. His popular TV program, Bible Prophecy Revealed, is carried on the Trinity Broadcasting Network. Grant, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Dave.
Why did you research and write this book, The Global Warming Deception?
Well, it's sort of a follow-up, logically, to my concern that motivated me to research and write Shadow Government. I felt from the wide research I've been doing for the last 5-6 years that there's no question we are on the road to global government, and it will, by its nature, be a totalitarian government where there may be the trappings of democracy, but it will be, in fact, a very dictatorial situation, much like the European Union is today, where the individual citizen has absolutely no say in what goes on about the laws or executives that really rule their country. I also became concerned as I continued to do research about the coming global government, which, by the way, is prophesied in the Old Testament and the New. Daniel tells us there will be a global government, and the book of Revelation affirms the same thing with a global dictator. But I also began to notice that the whole scientific issue of man-made global warming, I began to study and research it about 5 years ago. I've always been fascinated by science. I've always considered myself a conservative and an environmentalist. I believe the Bible tells us as Christians that we are definitely commanded to have dominion and stewardship over the planet, and I believe God holds us responsible for taking care of the environment. But I noticed something strange about 5 years ago. I noticed that instead of dealing with the science, which clearly for centuries has been known that the sun is the major energy engine of our solar system, that the scientists that were pushing this, and especially the United Nations and the missionary of global warming, Al Gore, I began to notice they were not interested in the sun at all, nor were they interested in talking about clouds. What they had chosen as the culprit, the thing that had to be stopped no matter what to save humanity and to save this planet from environmental disaster, was a trace gas called carbon dioxide. Now, Dave, this is really strange because I know from my science, and I verified it amply, source-citated in my book so people can check these things out for themselves. Every single statement, as you have seen, is given with documentation. But I found that carbon dioxide, in fact, is a trace gas. It's 4 parts in 1,000 of 1% of the atmosphere is carbon dioxide.
Wow.
But it's worse than that. Because what they're talking about is not eliminating carbon dioxide. Because, by the way, if they did eliminate carbon dioxide, we wouldn't be having this conversation because there's no life on planet Earth without carbon dioxide. Despite the Environmental Protection Agency claiming that it is a pollutant, it is no more a pollutant than oxygen or nitrogen. It's a nutrient. If there was no carbon dioxide, plants can't live. And if there's no plants, there's no animals and there's no humans, okay?
Right.
So I thought, why are they focusing on carbon dioxide when it's so small? And by the way, of the carbon dioxide that exists, which is 4 parts in 1,000 of 1%, only 3% of that is produced by humans. In other words, of the carbon dioxide that is out there, volcanoes produce far more than humanity. Even cows and pigs and horses from both ends produce more of this gas.
And what about termites?
Termites produce even more than mankind by about 10 times. Swamps produce more than we. In other words, if we put the Earth's economy into the Stone Age, no industrial activity, no burning of fossil fuels to provide energy or gas or anything else, the maximum we would reduce the carbon dioxide that is out there is 3%. Now, that is so small that it couldn't possibly make a significant difference, even if their theory was correct. And I can tell you this is true because it's been calculated, and no one's disputed it, that if the Kyoto Treaty were followed by all the nations of the world, And it demands that eventually, between now and 2100, that would be 90 years, it demands that we transfer $16 trillion to the third world to help them cope with global warming. But the important thing is it requires us to absolutely destroy the economies of all nations, especially Western nations, by reducing our standard of living down to the depression level. Now, if we did this after 90 years, enormous pain, enormous sacrifice, what would be the benefit? The UN scientists calculate that instead of going up 10 degrees Fahrenheit in 100 years, it would only go up 9.7. In other words, one-third of a degree benefit, under their theory, if we literally destroyed our Western economies over the next century. Now, this is insane. It's all pain and no gain. That's when I began to say, what's the real hidden agenda?
On page 130, you made mention to the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's 0.038%. The atmosphere, as you say on page 130, is primarily composed of 78.1% nitrogen, 20.9% oxygen, and 1% of gases.
One of the best ways for our listeners to get their mind along how small carbon dioxide is just imagine a huge astrodome filled with a million white balloons. These white balloons, a million of them, represent the molecules in the atmosphere. Now, out of a million representing the atmosphere, how many of those million balloons would be carbon dioxide? Actually, 391 of them. Mm-hmm. Now, how many would be the 3% produced by human activity? 12 balloons. 12 balloons, dark green in honor of Al Gore, representing man-made carbon dioxide, would be man's contribution from all of our industrial activity to a million balloons. 12 out of a million. Now, that's how you can realize visually how small man's contribution is to carbon dioxide. And it remains at this stage still a theory, Dave, that carbon dioxide is the significant impact upon global climate. The truth of the matter is the majority of climatologists and weathermen who deal with climate, the vast majority of them do not agree that carbon dioxide is the major determinant. They look rather at the sun, which is obviously a major energy engine in our solar system, and also the degree of cloudiness, which obviously affects how much impact there's going to be from the sun upon the global climate. And yet the scientists and those who are leading from the United Nations, the global warming effort, they focus exclusively on this trace gas of carbon dioxide. And here is the reason. They can't do anything about the sun. The sun is going to produce magnetic energy, and there's nothing humankind can do anything about. We cannot affect the clouds. Therefore, they looked at carbon dioxide because that is something that, while it is incredibly small in its probable impact, if you control carbon dioxide by taxing it, by cap and trade regulation, by calling it a pollution so that the Environmental Protection Agency can regulate it, you can control every single human activity. Because we can't live without producing carbon dioxide in every activity from breathing to actual use of any kind of industry or cars. And therefore, by naming carbon dioxide as the culprit, they put themselves in a position to literally control all human activity of governments, of countries, of companies, and of you yourself. Because I know you, in reading the book, saw the kind of regulations they have in mind, all in a vain attempt to control carbon dioxide. They want to limit your ability to drive on vacation, to use planes to go on vacation. They want to limit the amount you can set your air conditioner at or the thermostat for heating. They want to restrict your life. According to the former president of Czechoslovakia, Klaus, he grew up under 30 years of communism, and he said that the extreme environmentalists want to regulate the lives of citizens in the West to a degree even the Nazis and the communists did not try.
Mm-hmm. This is an incredible topic. I want to get to who they are, and I want to start with the IPCC. Can you explain to our listeners what the IPCC is?
Well, this is a group authorized by the United Nations called the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They have issued four major reports starting in the late 90s. The last one was 2007, the fourth report. And that report is the one that is being used by extreme environmentalists to demand that the economies of the world, especially the Western world, radically transform themselves away from business, free enterprise, and market economies, the kind of economy that has produced the greatest wealth in the history of the world, the wealth that is the envy of billions of people throughout the world who want to come to the West because of the wealth produced by inexpensive, reliable energy, which comes from fossil fuels. And so what they've done is they've demonized fossil fuels because of their release of carbon dioxide, and they've made that the supreme enemy to the ludicrous lie of even causing the Environmental Protection Agency name carbon dioxide as a pollutant, which is simply untrue. And so we have a situation where as I began to get into the research, who's behind this? Now, please let me say, first of all, that the average environmentalist is not the bad guy here. The average environmentalist is someone who takes their responsibility as a human seriously to protect our environment, to pass on this earth in the same or better condition to our children and grandchildren than we received it from our parents. And I have no difficulty with them whatsoever, except that those who are the extreme environmentalists, like Al Gore and like Jim Hansen and others who are advisors to the Obama administration, who together with the UN scientists have created this eco-crisis that is demanding, without debate, that the Western economies transform themselves radically, not only toward a massive socialism, but on top of that, their second goal is to achieve global government. What they have said is, look, the problem of global warming is so great, so vast, that no one nation, not even a superpower like America, can solve it on their own. Therefore, the only solution, they claim, is to get rid of the U.S. Constitution, the Canadian Constitution, my country, and to replace them with a global government, which by definition will be led by an elite. And guess who these elite are? The very ones that have produced this crisis of an extreme environmentalist challenge to the Western way of life, to the use of the energy that has been provided to our planet, that's so available that we have the ability now by harnessing coal and oil and natural gas to produce a level of wealth and therefore health and prosperity, including food, to the entire planet. And yet they want to tell us we cannot use energy like we have before. They claim that the only thing we can do to save the earth is to use renewable fuels like wind power and solar panels. Well, let me tell you what happened in Spain. In Spain, they transformed their power system by setting up massive wind farms and solar energy panels at an enormous cost of billions of dollars. But then they found that while theoretically a wind farm or a solar panel farm would produce X amount of energy, the reality was somewhat different because clouds would stop the solar panels from receiving the sun's energy. Night, of course, there was no sun hitting at all. Wind farms were very erratic, and in fact, the results of their study that was released before my book came out and I was able to quote it, is that on average, wind farms and solar panels produce only about one quarter of the energy that is expected. Well, you cannot run a city or an industrial plant on energy which constantly varies. You need reliable, inexpensive energy, and that comes only from coal, oil, or natural gas. So here's what Spain was forced to do, Dave. They were forced to produce alternative backup plants using coal or natural gas or oil. And so it's like having a car that is a clunker, and you go out and buy a second car so that you have reliable transportation. It's not very economical because you've got two car payments, but in fact, you only have one reliable car. And Spain had issued a report that said that their economic disaster, which they're virtually on the edge of bankruptcy now, is produced to an incredible extent by their trying to achieve reliable, renewable energy power. In the United States, only 2-3% of all the energy produced in the United States comes from wind farms and solar panels. It's a fraction, and while it's fine to imagine increasing that significantly, the idea that we'll ever replace coal and natural gas and oil, according to the scientists and energy executives, ludicrous. They just say it's impossible that it will ever provide the massive amounts of energy that our countries need. We need reliable power that is inexpensive. And if we have that, then we can have the prosperity that not only provides prosperity to our citizens, but provides the food and the fertilizer and everything that is required to help lift the third world out of thousands of years of poverty. And it can be done. If we continue as we are and we don't commit economic suicide the way the global warming extremists demand, then we will be able in this century to raise the standard of living to people even in the third world to what it was in America, certainly after World War II.
Mm-hmm. So in 1988, the global warming movement began, as you say, on page 77, and the next year, the IPCC was created. As you say on page 79, there's only 10 full-time staff, and also you state in the book twice that it's only something like 36 British and American scientists who are at the core of this global warming deception. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And what is curious is that when you get into the whole question of man-made global warming, when you say, okay, what is the evidence for this? Because here's what the theory is. There's no question, Dave, that man's contribution to carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is going up. Every year we produce about 4% more carbon dioxide. Right now we're at 390 parts per million by volume in the year, 390.
And that went up from when you started writing the book, right?
Oh, yes, 4% every year. And there's no question, as business as usual, it will double over the next century and, you know, we'll keep going. The idea of the extremist in the environment is that this is a disaster which must be stopped because they believe that it will cause an absolutely runaway rise of global temperature. Well, let's take a look at it. In the last century, because there was no significant man-made contribution to carbon dioxide before, say, 1900, the Industrial Revolution really kicked in after 1900. Mm-hmm. Well, if we say carbon dioxide going up every 4% every year, what happened to global temperatures over the last century, starting at 1900? Well, there's no question there was a very, very gradual rise of about a third of a degree Fahrenheit up until World War II. Well, that looks promising from the standpoint of the theory. But then in 1945, about at the end of World War II, for the next decades until 1975, for three decades, 30 years, it began to cool. Well, after World War II, there was a vast expansion of the amount of carbon dioxide industrial activity was producing, but why was it cooling? Then in 1976, it turned again. Now it started rising for 23 years. For 23 years, the carbon dioxide was going up and the temperature was going up, which meant that by 1997, if you look at the temperature rise from 1900 in total, it was 1 degree Fahrenheit. Now, most people who have not looked at this deeply imagine that it must have been far greater than that to cause the vast concern and the willingness of governments to actually consider sacrificing the whole West standard of living. They think 1 degree Fahrenheit? That's not a huge problem. It wasn't a problem at all. The seas did rise 1 foot in the last century. Again, not a problem. We're not drowning cities. But here's what happened to the theory. The theory is that as carbon dioxide relentlessly increases, so will global warming temperatures. But that's not what happened. What happened was there was a rise up until 1945. Then there was a cooling until 1975. Then there was a rise up until 1997. Now, what's happened since 1998? Well, in the last 12 years, Dave, it's been cooling. In fact, we have lost, in the last 12 years, the entire rise of 1 degree Fahrenheit that we experienced in the last century. So, in other words, our temperature now, globally, is down back to very close to what it was in 1900. We've erased the very small rise of temperature back in the last century. The theory predicts the exact opposite. There's nothing in the theory that predicted there would ever be a cooling after World War II. They sure didn't predict there would be a cooling after 1998, and therefore the theory is not backed up by the history. And in science, when you come up with a theory, you then make a prediction, and then you watch what happens. And when the prediction fails, you go back to the drawing board and change your theory. Try and come up with a better one. Mm-hmm. But that's not what they're willing to do. They have held on to this and acted as if it's getting warmer and warmer, when in fact, even Professor Phil Jones, the leading climate scientist for the United Nations, he's in Britain, he's in the climate research unit of the University of East Anglia, he admitted to the British Daily Mail, and this happened in February last year, he admitted that really there have been, for the last 15 years, no significant global warming. Now, that's an incredible admission, because if there's no global warming in the last 15 years, yet carbon dioxide keeps increasing, then it's not the culprit that they have painted it to be. And if that's not true, why in the world would we literally commit economic suicide, which is what is demanded by the Kyoto Treaty and the Copenhagen negotiations? The massive carbon taxes will rise the price of energy throughout the world, which will suppress industrial activity, suppress the creation of wealth, and yet I argue, and many others do, is based, in fact, on a total exaggeration. Therefore, I began to ask the question, then what is the agenda? Because these are smart people. It's not that they're stupid. What are they really after was my question, and that led me to 5 years of detailed research. Now, see, the global warming theory that the United Nations and Al Gore and the others base their entire campaign upon is not based on actual scientific data. It's based on a theory that is using climate computer models. There's about 21 universities, three of which are most important, but 21 universities that have supercomputers into which they input thousands of different variables and formulas. And what they do is they project mathematically, if we increase carbon dioxide by so much, then what will happen? And they project what will happen in 2050, what will happen in 2100. This is well and good, but it's not scientific evidence. Anyone who's worked with computers knows that what a projection does in a computer tells you a lot more about the assumptions of the computer programmer who planned this rather than what's going to happen in the future. What to do is change the variable. Well, not one of the 21 climate computer models, not one, Dave, predicted that as of 1998, with carbon dioxide increasing, that the global temperatures would begin to cool for the next 12 years. Not one of them predicted it. And if that's true, then how in the world would you base the entire economy and standard of living of the West on computer models that have failed in the first 12 years of their real projections of what's going to happen?
Well, do they still have a chance? I mean, considering that, and also that they didn't predict in any way, shape, or form that since 1998, temperatures would be cooling. On top of it, what happened with the release of all the emails in that ClimateGate controversy, do they still
many
have a
them
chance?
Admit there's, no, I don't believe they do, but many of them have admitted they're puzzled. Some of them have said it's a travesty that they can't find evidence or even a cause for the cooling. But, you know, one of the interesting things that scientists did discover is that during that period from 1976 to 1997, when global warming was taking place, that was the period when the Earth was heating up a bit, not a huge amount, in total, 1 degree Fahrenheit. But what astronomers discovered is that Mars was heating up at the same time. Some of the moons of the planets in the solar system were heating up, and some of the ice caps on Mars and other moons of some of the larger planets, the ice caps were retreating a bit. Well, that's intriguing, because what's the common factor with Mars and some of the moons of large planets? The sun is the common factor that could possibly affect them all. Now, here's what's happened to the sun. When we have lots of sunspots, and we sometimes have anywhere from 40 or 50 sunspots a day, sometimes as much as 500 or more a day. Well, last year, we went over something like 270 days with no sunspots. We also had almost no sunspots the year before. None. Day after day, month after month, with not a single sunspot. Now, solar scientists will tell you that when they have them, it tells you that the sun's magnetic field is very active. When there are little or none in the way of sunspots, it's a strong indication that the sun is slowing at that point. It's in a variable cycle, and the sun goes through cycles. And when that happens, that indicates the sun is not kicking out as much magnetic force that is hitting the Earth. Many of the Russian scientists, for example, that are solar scientists, they have been predicting that we're probably in for 2 or 3 decades of cooling because the sun is in one of those cycles that it's actually going a bit inactive in terms of kicking out magnetic energy. And so they've been predicting that it would, in fact, be getting a bit cooler. And, of course, in the last 12 years, they've been correct.
Hmm. It's amazing stuff. On page 32, you talk about the summary of global temperature history, and you start with what's called the Roman Warm Period from about 250 BC to AD 450. Can you run down for our listeners the history of global temperature?
Scientists have known for a few centuries that there have been changes in the global temperature of the Earth that have taken place, that the climate is not stable. There's a curious idea out there now that there's some perfect global temperature, and that basically if it goes any higher or lower in terms of global temperature, that it's a huge disaster. Well, the truth of the matter is God created this Earth with a kind of self-regulating thermostat. For example, if the sun's activity is especially strong and the temperature is increasing a couple degrees, what happens is there's more evaporation. The greater evaporation produces more clouds. The clouds act to suppress the temperature, and it tends to now cool a bit. And so it regulates itself. What we've seen going back historically is that there were periods when it was much warmer than it is today, and much warmer than it was in 1997 at its peak, when it was 1 degree Fahrenheit warmer than it is now. The significance of that, Dave, is that if there were periods when the Earth's climate was significantly warmer, like 2 or 3 degrees warmer than now, and this period took place long before the Industrial Revolution, then obviously man-made carbon dioxide can't be the culprit. Well, what the global warming scientists, the alarmists as I call them, have come up with is they just suppressed historically the temperature data that showed that there was a number of periods in the past when it was significantly warmer than it is now, plus a number of centuries when it was significantly cooler. They wanted to make the only culprit man's contribution to carbon dioxide, no matter how small it is. So what they did is Professor Michael Mann at the University of Pennsylvania, he came up with the famous hockey stick graph. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change bought this and used it and illustrated it in its 2007 Fourth Assessment Report of Climate Change. They called it the hockey stick because imagine a hockey stick lying on its side, essentially flat for a long period, and then all of a sudden in the last 30 years or so, the hockey stick blade goes up at a very steep angle. Mm-hmm. What he did is he said, this has been the climate for the last 1,000 years. It's basically been an even climate with no significant cooling, no significant heating until about 1975 when it started to go up rapidly. Now, that it started to go up rapidly since 75 is true, but what he forgot is that it also stopped in 98 and started cooling for 12 years. But anyway, what he did was he wiped out the data that showed that there were periods in the past when it was significantly warmer than it is today or even 12 years ago, and that these obviously happened without reference to carbon dioxide. For example, as you pointed out on page 33 of the book, there was a Roman warm period back before the time of Christ, a couple centuries, right up until 450 BC, in which there was a significantly warmer period.
450 AD, right?
AD, I'm sorry, yes, you're correct. And it was as warm as 10 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than it is today. Then there was, in the Dark Ages, a cold period that went from that period right up to 900 AD, when it was significantly colder. And there was poor health. It was a period of very bad lowering of civilization, low agriculture, famine, drought. Then there was the medieval warm period. From 900 AD until 1300, it became significantly warmer, over 2 degrees warmer. And it was a time of great blessing because there was a lot of improvement of agriculture in Greenland. They were growing vines and grapes and making wine, the Vikings. And then, of course, as all things change, the Little Ice Age came in about AD 1350. for the next 500 years, from 1350 right up to about just before the American Civil War, there was a little ice age, and it was cold. The temperature fell more than 3 degrees Fahrenheit, and it was a very, very unpleasant time with low agriculture, drought, and there were a lot of wars. Now we had a period after World War II when we'd gone through several centuries of very cold weather. Then we started coming out of it after World War II. About 1865, the Earth gradually started to warm. And as I said, from 1900 until about 1945, it went up about a third of a degree Fahrenheit. Then it cooled. Then as of 1976, right up until 1997, for about 23 years, from the time of 1976 right up until 1997, there was a period of warming. And in total, the last century saw 1 degree Fahrenheit warming. But now that's been erased. The last 12 years of global cooling have erased that, and we're right back to the temperature as it was around 1900. Well, obviously, the theory of global warming, that is carbon dioxide in the atmosphere increases, and as they worry about primarily caused by man's activities, that it would cause an absolute parallel increase of global temperature is not backed up by the history. And that's why I say there's no scientific evidence here. It is a scientific theory, and they're basing it on projections, mathematical projections, based on these computer climate computers. They model it and say, well, if you do this and increase one factor, then it will increase temperature. But unfortunately for their theory, in the last 12 years, it has totally gone in the wrong direction that their theory predicted, and none of them have suggested why.
And as you say on page 71, weather forecasters and meteorologists using the most sophisticated computerized weather models admit that weather forecasts are fairly accurate for a maximum of 1 week. How are they going to predict out to 2100?
Yeah, this is what's crazy, because everyone knows that no one would plan their vacation and risk tens of thousands of dollars on a super tour around the world based on a weather forecast, because we know that after a week to 10 days, they're totally unreliable. And that is one of the significant reasons why the vast majority of weathermen have not bought into the global warming theory. It is significant that while the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change claimed that there was a consensus of thousands of weather scientists, climate scientists, that global warming was caused by man's activity. The reality is that these researchers have discovered that there were about 35 or 36 climate scientists who really participated in the study and contributed to writing the reports. Many of the so-called thousands that the UN claimed on examination turned out not to have degrees in science or weather or anything. They're people without PhDs, and they just had them sign their names to bulk up the numbers. As opposed to that, there were over 31,000 climate scientists, people involved with climatology and weather, 31,000 who signed a petition to Congress and to President Obama stating that they have seen no evidence that convinces them that man-made activities are responsible for global warming. The vast majority of those scientists that are looking at this have, at this point, said, we've not seen the evidence. Now, people listening to this may think, well, then there's really not a big problem, but here's the problem. Those who are the leaders, those billionaires who are often behind this, who have a very socialistic worldview, who absolutely declare that global government is the only future that we can have, they are not going to pack their bags and go home simply because the data is against them, or that we've undergone 12 years of cooling and we're going through severe winter storms. I mean, Copenhagen had the coldest winter a year ago than they've had in 100 years. Cancun, Mexico, where they had the climate conference just December of 2010, that was the coldest Cancun has ever been. They're not going to pack their bags and go home. These scientists and politicians have committed their careers, their tenure in universities, their grants from governments that provide the millions of dollars to let them do and study what they want. They are committed. And when scientists have written papers about global warming caused by man-made contributions to carbon dioxide, they're committed. Let's face it, human nature is such that no one wants to admit they were wrong. And people hold on to a position even after it's been contradicted by science because they don't want to admit they were wrong. What I discovered, and I document in the book, Dave, is that the leadership, not the average person who's an environmentalist, but the leadership behind this extreme environmental movement has an agenda, and that is a transformation of the society and economy of the West into something of extreme socialism to get rid of free enterprise, to get rid of capitalism. And I show quote after quote how they openly state how they despise capitalism and free enterprise, how they want the government to control business entirely, and they are utterly committed to global government in the end, therefore, of your constitution and mine to replace it with a global government. And so when I began to look at their desires and their goal, I realized that there was a reason why they were supporting this global warming when the facts did not support them. Here's what I discovered. On page 22, I quote from a document that I found from 1993. It's called the Club of Rome. Now, the Club of Rome is a globalist think tank, and they have a council that produced this report, which is entitled The First Global Revolution. People can check it themselves on the internet. These people were talking in their conference and in this document about the fact that the average person didn't want global government and they didn't want to abandon the prosperity that free enterprise capital and markets had given us. They then said, quote, "In searching for a common enemy against whom we can unite, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. In their totality and their interactions, these phenomena do constitute a common threat which must be confronted by everyone together." He goes on to say, "The real enemy then is humanity itself." In other words, they contrived a crisis that would be very effective, and I believe it's been one of the most effective propaganda, big lies since Dr. Goebbels of the Nazis back in the 1930s, that they've stated that there is global warming by the leaders like Al Gore and the United Nations. They have co-opted the educational establishment completely. Al Gore's PowerPoint presentation called An Inconvenient Truth that contains, according to a judge in England who examined it with scientists, well over 35 scientific errors, not one of which has ever been corrected. This PowerPoint presentation, which says that the seas are going to rise up to 23 feet, that Miami and New York and London and Singapore, they're going to be flooded. All of these scientific either exaggerations or downright lies have been now seen by tens of millions of young children in school, sometimes four to a dozen times by different teachers showing this power presentation. There are thousands of individuals that Al Gore has trained who now go through country after country offering their services to show this PowerPoint presentation. Even child psychologists, Dave, have said that children are sometimes not able to sleep because they're lying at night dreaming of the world being drowned because of the images of this. And even I was reading an article the other week of young couples who say they're not going to have any children because they don't want to bring their children into a world with no hope, which they now believe because of the propaganda is the real situation. The media, the educational establishment have bought into this almost universally. And so we're in for a very significant struggle. This will not be turned around in a few years, even with the scientific data on our side and even with the continued cooling.
It's amazing. You know, I wondered after reading the book how this small group of three dozen British and American scientists could get away with what they're getting away with. And on page 90, you say that there is far greater financial support available to those who promote the man-made global warming agenda than there is for any scientists who dare to explore alternative climate research theories. Do you think that they're just being paid off? That's why they're using computer models and not historical temperature data?
I think it's just human nature. If someone you know is willing to provide government grants and foundations are willing to give you millions of dollars to study your field of study, which is some part of climate, and you know that if you say that the purpose is to study how some factor affects global warming, it's an automatic yes. You're going to have all of them to expand your staff and to absolutely do the research you want. It would take a more honest person than most people can be to actually say, what I want to do is I want to study whether or not there is global warming and whether or not mankind has anything to do with it. Because the likelihood of you getting funded is slim to none. In fact, there are many reports that scientists, professors have been ostracized. Some have lost their job, lost tenure, certainly lost government and foundation grants when they have shown any even questioning of the science of man-made global warming. This is one of the most successful campaigns from a propaganda standard that I have ever seen. For example, let me just read one of the most well-respected scientists in the world. Mm-hmm. This guy is an American professor, a physicist who was so appalled at the position taken by the American Physical Society, which is one of the most prestigious American scientific organizations. He'd been a member for 67 years. He'd been a leader in many of those years. But Professor Harold Lewis is one of the most respected and published physicists in the world. He is the professor of physics at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And here's what he said, quote, "Global warming is the greatest and most successful pseudoscientific fraud I have seen in my long life." I have numerous other quotes from very well-respected scientists who have faced great opposition, and many of them have basically kept silent for many, many years, hoping that this thing would just die, basically the weight of scientific evidence against it.
Right.
But finally, many of them in integrity have decided they can't stand by and let the West literally commit economic suicide, to let individuals have an agenda to literally keep the third world in poverty, because in their agenda, they have made statements that I quote, that they don't want to see the United States reproduce itself. In other words, they do not want to see India or China become a second or third United States in terms of economy. They don't want them to have inexpensive energy. They've even made statements repeatedly that they do not want the third world to move forward from villages with terribly unsanitary water. They don't want to see them have wells and filters for a few billion dollars. All of Africa could have sanitary water in their wells, and yet they are against this. Mm-hmm. They want to hold the world exactly where it is. I'm sure you are as shocked in reading some of these quotations, and I document them so that the reader can go on the internet or go to a library and see where I got these, because I can tell you I was shocked, David, when I began to research these things. I do not include any quotations unless I have multiple sources for them, because it's vital that what I say in the book be accurate and that people can have confidence and can check it out for themselves.
Yeah, I was shocked. I was most shocked, I think, not just about these extremists' dislike and hate for capitalism and Western democracy, but how they actually want people to die. They want to depopulate the planet, don't they?
Well, that was the most shocking for me. When I read comments by individuals who openly and repeatedly said that they believe that what we need on Earth is a sustainable population, I wondered, well, what do you mean by that? And I began to realize that when you hear the word sustainable population, pay attention, wake up. It is a code word for a depopulation of the earth. And many of these open quotes that I include in the book, individuals that are the elite behind the man-made global warming movement, have stated openly that they believe that the earth cannot sustain itself with 6.5 billion plus people, that the earth's population must be reduced, they claim, to less than 1 billion, some say 500 million people, that Africa must not be allowed to increase its population, and in fact, they want it to decrease massively. Well, how in the world, David, would you go from 6.5 billion people to 1 billion? There's not enough bullets in the world to do that.
Right.
The only way it could be done is with starvation and plague. Now, they don't tell us, at least none of the available quotations that I was able to find, the practical way that they intend to accomplish such a thing. But again and again, I run into statements by extreme environmentalists connected with this movement who state openly that their goal is to reduce the Earth's population to less than 1 billion people, and that they believe that only then can the Earth sustain itself. There are some quotes that I include in the book where they even go so far as to say that perhaps mankind should become extinct itself, that the Earth would be better off without humans at all. One of the most astonishing things, and I include a whole chapter in this book, Dave, is the chapter that deals with the man-made church of global warming. There is a religious component to this that most surprised me. Now, the Bible tells us, in the words of the Apostle Paul back in Romans 1, that one of the characteristics of the last days generation would be that mankind would refuse to worship God, the Creator, but would worship creation. When I first heard about this 20 years ago, John Lovelock of the United Kingdom, a professor, wrote a book about Gaia, the Earth Spirit, in which he proposed that Earth was a sentient being and that we really should worship the Earth. This, as a neo-pagan religion, going back to ancient pantheism, believing God was in the trees and in the earth and in the water, and that they wanted to worship the Earth, and certainly not God. And I began to realize in the quotations that there was a very active hatred of Christianity and Judaism and of the God of the Bible, and that they wanted to replace current religion with a new religion that would worship the earth, that worship the environment. And this, I believe, is something that most people are utterly unaware of and need to be aware of. I wrote the book because I know that most people do not have the ability or the time to do the kind of research that I have done over the last 5-6 years. And so I wanted, basically, to be able to share my research with the readers so that they then could inform their families, their friends, and act as an antidote to this overwhelming propaganda campaign from the media, from the educational associations, teachers, and that we could have our voice returned to us, and so people could write to their congressman, to their senator, and write to their political representatives and say, look, we do not want to put America or any other nation under global government. We want to keep our nation and keep our constitution. We want, you know, to keep the free enterprise economy that is the envy of the whole world, that has produced the greatest wealth in the history of humanity. We don't want to have a new type of socialism produced in our nation that would absolutely bring us back to the Depression time in terms of the economy, all to satisfy the imaginations of those who are promoting the man-made global warming myth.
And as you say on page 154, many of the most extreme AGW, and of course that's anthropogenic global warming, which means obviously man-made, AGW alarmists hold tightly to an intellectual atheistic philosophy. There's so much really that people need to know. That's why I was saying earlier it's so important for people to go out and get this book. I just want to run down them quickly and then touch on one thing and ask you a final question if I could. We need people to not just contact their congressman and senator or congresswoman, but prior to that, pick up this book, The Global Warming Deception, and find out about how volcanoes impact climate, how the Pacific Ocean does near the equator, how termites do, how, as Grant said earlier, sunspots, and take a look at the relationship between solar radiation and temperature and the myths of the Antarctic ice shelf and the polar bear myth, and learn about the Argo ocean sensory arrays that provide lots of evidence about ocean depth and many other things. And of course, Mount Kilimanjaro. There's so many things to know about global warming and why it is a fraud, because you present the evidence so clearly. You did mention before about contacting our representatives, which is very important. But as I said, I think it's much, much more important for people to get this book, The Global Warming Deception, How a Secret Elite Plans to Bankrupt America and Steal Your Freedom, by Grant R. Jeffrey. I wanted to ask you, Grant, in closing, how does this global warming deception fit into the Bible's prophetic scenario of an approaching global government and the rise of the Antichrist in our generation?
Well, there are two aspects to the hidden political agenda of the elite that are behind this. They want to achieve not only global government, but a socialist, almost communistic economy within that global government. It is interesting from a prophetic standpoint that Daniel and the book of Revelation both tell us that there will be global government for the first time in human history during this generation when Christ returns. For example, in Daniel, he tells us that everyone on earth is going to worship this man, and they're going to give him power throughout the whole of the world. In Revelation 13, 7 and 8, we're told every tribe, every kindred, every tongue is going to give him worship and power. Now, this has never happened before in human history. We've seen huge empires like Babylon, Assyria. We have seen seen the Grecian Empire of Alexander and the Roman Empire, and of course we've seen even the British Empire that for a time ruled one quarter of the globe. We have never seen anything like a global empire. The second thing is the prophet Daniel tells us clearly that one of the characteristics of this global government and the global dictator known as the Antichrist is that he divides the land for gain. In other words, he's going to be a socialist communist. He's going to redistribute income and property to gain power and control and popularity. In another place, Daniel tells us that by his policy, he causes the economy or craft to prosper. He's going to come in as an economic genius. And so in these prophecies, together with what the Apostle Paul warns us in Romans 1, that one of the characteristics of the end is going to be a new paganism that is going to worship the creation, not the creator, is precisely where we find ourselves with this extreme environmentalism that has taken a concern for the environment and has tried to produce a new global pagan religion, but also a political, economic, social movement that will transform the America that most of our listeners love and enjoy and want to pass on to their children.
It's a fascinating topic, Grant. It's an amazing book. So glad you wrote it.
Where's it's available?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
In Christian and secular bookstores, it's available starting within 2 days. And at the same time, people can get it by going to our website. My website is grantjeffrey.com. That's one word, grantjeffrey.com. Jeffrey is J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. And they can then order this book, Shadow Government, or any of my other works. And I also post intelligence articles, up-to-date things. I'm just posting one this week on Al Gore's mention that the severe winter and massive snowstorms are caused by global warming. Well, that's the exact opposite of what he said in Inconvenient Truth, and exactly opposite to what the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change said. So these guys are changing the story as they go.
Well, you know what? That's from a guy who created the internet, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Amazing. So the book actually is coming out in a couple of days then?
Yes.
Okay. Grant, you did it again. Grant R. Jeffrey, best-selling author, 30 books, over 8 million copies sold worldwide, The Global Warming Deception, How a Secret Elite Plans to Bankrupt America and Steal Your Freedom. Listeners, get out there, get the book, learn this stuff. I fell for the propaganda. I admit it, I did, because I hadn't studied it. I hadn't researched it. You have the right information in here, Grant, for people to get educated. And once they do, then have the confidence to contact your political representative and let them know how you feel about this obvious fraud. Grant, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining this to our listeners. And again, thanks so much for writing the book.
I enjoyed it. God bless.